This is the Warriors Ground Podcast, and we are in the home stretch as now 3 weeks remain before the playoffs. I'm Lawrence Scott. We've got much in store this time around, starting with a moment from our game broadcast Sunday night against the Sixers.
Warrior lead is 18. Bruce Frazier, Jaren Collins, and Luke Walton. The Warrior film sessions often feature a gag on someone within the Warrior organization. Most recently...
It takes him half an hour to watch a 48-minute game. The league's reigning MVP is actually helping him warm up. He's made illegal defense legal in 48 states and Puerto Rico. Opposing coaches call timeout to slow him down. He's never been a head coach, but still has as many wins as Luke Walton. When he gets a technical, the league pays him. He is the most interesting man in the NBA.
That is courtesy of Lawrence Scott. Check out all his stuff at Warriors.com. And cue Bruce Frazier, the most interesting man in the world. And that was spliced into a Warrior film session to get the attention of the players and coaching staff laughing as well. Very well done, Lawrence, and all of Lawrence's work at Warriors.com. But we thought we would share that with you.
Thank you to Fitz and Jim for the nice words and putting the spotlight on Q during the broadcast, sharing some of what we're up to on Warriors.com with all of our Warriors digital platforms, the videos we do, this podcast, and so much more. And as for this episode of the Warriors Ground Podcast, you've perhaps seen our videos and others of the unique training techniques that some of the Warriors use with flashing lights, tennis balls, resistance bands, and more, as Stephen Curry, Draymond Green, and Harrison Barnes are putting in the work and seeing it pay off. As the founder of Accelerate Basketball Training, Brandon Payne will join us to talk about how in-season training differs from off-season training. Also, former Warriors fan favorite Baron Davis on the comeback trail is our featured conversation, as R.C. Davis and Baron spent some time together in Santa Cruz, plus the debut of our new segment for sneakerheads, Kicking It with Koseezy, Colorways, the Curry 2, and the Shoes of March Madness, all topics, as we get to it now with Brandon Payne.
You know, when we're in the season, we're looking to do things where we're not taxing them physically too much. We're looking to bring some things to them that maybe are a little bit different than what their coaches have them do every day, to kind of help break up the monotony of the season a little bit. You know, in the off season, we're looking at really, you know, large issues for the players. So we're looking physically, we're looking skill wise, we're looking at everything. During the season, we're really focusing on some small little details. Stuff. We use a lot of technology during the season because, again, we can make improvements without taxing them too much.
You know, we were at your place and saw what we called scalable in the video. And you said, you know, this is something that young basketball players can do. Your son was doing the lights drill. But now the lights drill is taking a new form with shooting as well here.
Sure, yeah. One of the things that we wanted to do was kind of take the technology and expand it out onto the floor a little bit more. So we kind of took the same concepts that we had with the ball handling stationary work, where we had each light gives us an assignment from a ball handling standpoint. We've moved it into shooting drills now. So now we're able to take some of the guys out on the floor, and we're able to give them reads during the shooting drills that force them to read, react, and also move their eyes like they would during the game. Because a lot of times during shooting drills, especially during the season, there's a lot of catch and shoot stuff going on. So you don't have to move your eyes very much, and you certainly don't have to react to anything. So just by doing this, it gives us the ability to give them short bursts of shooting that they give them a game type feel mentally that helps them out during the games.
What are some of the things that fans can look for in watching the games that are part of how the training is helping the guys advance that part of their game?
Sure. I think probably of course, Stephen is the prime example there. But some of the things that you're looking for there is really Stephen's hips. That's something that we work on. We work on all the different moves that we use with his hips constantly facing the basket. The difference between him and a lot of other ball handlers is his hips never turn, they never twist. So if you're watching one of the players that he's playing against, you'll notice that they take a count longer to get their shot. shot off simply because there's a correction they have to make with their hips before they shoot it. So with Stefan, especially when we're using the lights and things like that, it forces him to stay square the entire time and make his moves laterally. So he's also retreating laterally, and it helps him get the shot off quicker.
This sounds crazy, but can people train perhaps maybe in the future to be deadly from half court like he's proving to be in these games?
No. You know, that's he just has such an amazing feel and touch with the basketball and control over the basketball that, you know, it just allows him to do that. And the fact that he's a lot stronger, but even when he's taking those half-court shots, you still see his mechanics coming through. And so with the superior mechanics combined with the added strength that he has, and he has control over the ball the way he does, and you're seeing that's why he makes a lot more than most.
Even taking us back to square one here, I mean, help folks understand that his training over the years, mm-hmm. from where he came from, playing at Charlotte Christian and working with Coach Sean Brown, and then being around his dad even before that, and the Hornets and Raptors teams that Dell played for, into Davidson and his work with Bob McKillop, how all of this kind of evolves into a player that somebody becomes, great people that he was always around. But now, with this kind of training, what has been the difference that you've seen in the past couple of years with the kind of training that you guys are doing at Accelerate?
I think it's just, you know, learning from the things that we're not doing well during the season. I think that's probably the biggest thing to take away. I mean, we go back all the way back to that San Antonio Spurs series a few years ago, and we sat in my office when he got back to Charlotte, and we simply talked about how can we better deal with length? How can we deal with people taking your space? And that's when we started working on a lot of the lateral and a lot of the retreating drills. And we worked and worked and worked on that. And so, you know, it's just him understanding what he's not doing well, what he needs to add to his game. And he's able to self-assess a lot of times. And when he does that, it makes my job a little bit easier.
The final night of the regular season is nearing, and a big evening is in store Wednesday, April 13th at Oracle Arena. Lawrence Scott here with the word on Fan Night, our annual celebration of the best fans in the NBA as the Warriors host the Memphis Grizzlies. All fans in attendance will receive a special Warriors Fan Night t-shirt courtesy of Adobe, with the team honoring Dub Nation at this, the final game before the playoffs begin. So for verified official tickets, check out warriors.com.
You think about Baron Davis and all that he meant to Warriors fans during the We Believe era, and then you see a couple years ago, RC, that he's talking about coming back, and it's almost presented like a comedy bit or a ruse on TNT and some digital shorts that they did, and then now you hear that he's in the D-League, really actually making a comeback.
He's really giving it a go. He didn't play the night we saw him. He had a sore calf. But you think about the success the Warriors are having now. When's the last time they had success? The We Believe team, the dunk over AK-47. It's a staple in people's minds. And we just caught up with Baron to see how he's doing down in the D-League.
So you drove down to Santa Cruz and hopefully stopped at the bagelry.
I did. Had some lox, had some bagels, and caught up with Baron on a rainy day in Santa Cruz.
Just a little mouse game.
Last game,
yeah. When you did it,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I came down, it felt a little tweak. Yeah, I'm definitely disappointed. I won't be able to play tonight, but you know, I'll be back hopefully on a bigger stage. So, just being cautious, you know, take some time to just ice it, get some of the information down, and get stronger. Yeah.
So, the natural question was why? Why put in all this work to come back to play in Delaware?
Man, I just, you know, I've been, for a while, you know, I just really, like, given up and didn't want to play basketball. And, you know, just, I guess, over the course of the 4 years I've been out, you know, I got hit with the bug. You know, I started playing in, it's like, it was just like a once-a-week thing, Sunday mornings, just recreational with friends. And then Santa Monica City College, it was just like an 8 a.m. run. Just a bunch of, like, you know, older players, misfits, you know. And that became, you know, that became fun, and that became a challenge, you know, where you got some young guys, some young high school guys and junior college guys coming to the gym, and you know, everybody want to challenge you because you've been in the NBA. And for me, it wasn't – for me, I wasn't looking for that. I was just looking to sweat, find a way to sweat on Sunday mornings, you know. And then from there, I played in the Drew a couple times. And, you know, kind of that felt good. And I was just like, you know, imagine what would happen if I played a whole season. So then the next year I played a whole season as I was shooting a documentary. So, you know, I was like, imagine if I wasn't shooting a documentary and I played a whole season, how much better I could be. And, you know, I came back the last season and it was fun. I had, you know, got my competitive drive back. You know, a lot of the guys that I kind of grew up playing with and playing against was just like, man, you still got something left. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just kind of picking up on the vibe from friends and family and, you know, fans in the airport, you know, all over the place. People just like, man, you left too soon. And in the back of my mind, I always thought about, you know, how I went out, you know, being carted off in the garden on that stretcher. So, you know, eventually it was just like, man, I have to, like, say my piece. I have to go and push myself and give it all that I can, and that's what led me to here. You know, I'm a believer of starting from the bottom, you know, starting wherever I got to start in order to get to where I need to get to. So for me, it's just, you know, looking at it as an opportunity to motivate people, an opportunity to just be around young guys and, you know, get back into the game and just work my way up the chain.
Baron Davis is a two-time NBA All-Star. What did he think the D-League was going to be like?
I can't say it's what I expected because I don't really expect everything. Every city, every day is different. And for me, it's, you know, I'm embracing it all. I kind of enjoy it, you know, just being around my teammates, organization, the coaches. Just seeing, you know, it's a different view from, you know, playing on a, you know, an NBA team and with all the luxurious amenities. But, you know, for me, it's a learning experience. You know, it's an opportunity for me to kind of like relearn the game, relearn all the things that it takes, you know, to be at that level again. And for me, it's like, you know, I want to start from the bottom. You know, I want to be a part of what these young guys are going through and, be a positive voice and a light to help them get to where they need to get to, you know, because I've done it and now, you know, I'm getting ready to do it again.
We last saw Baron on an NBA court being carted off the Madison Square Garden court after ripping up his knee. So I asked him if he felt robbed, for lack of a better term, of ending his career his way.
Yeah, I was. I felt like, you know, I was at a pivotal point when that happened, where if that would have not happened, then I would have had a chance to come back and, you know, really had a good summer and play again. You know, I played in the playoffs and, you know, felt what that was like and kind of was having a fun time playing in the playoffs. I just wasn't able to perform the way I wanted to, you know, from a physical standpoint, because I filled in for Jeremy Lin because he was out. You know, he didn't play at all in the playoffs. So, you know, for me, it was just like, if I could just get back to just playing and being like a veteran leader off the team and somebody coming off the bench, I was cool in that role, you know, to see where the next phase of my career was going to go. To me, it was almost like the way that I was feeling, you know, even when I was in New York, was just like, if I could have made it through that season, I was going to take a year off anyway, just to let my body heal. And when I got hurt, it was just like, well, oh, there it is. That's the coup de grace. And because of the severity of my knee, I just really wanted to be able to walk. Right. You know, I wanted to be able to walk and be, you know, as I got older, be someone that can just, you know, play, shoot around with his kids or run and chase after my kids. So that was more my mentality. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely rehab, but it wasn't like with a purpose of trying to get back into the NBA, because you know, the rest of my body hadn't healed up, and you know, my knee had so much trauma in it. It just needed time, you know, and that's what I figured out. The more time that kind of went by, the better my knee became, and you know, And then I was able to do more and more things.
You might have seen Barron on the Summer League circuit over the last year or two, or on YouTube playing in the Drew League. So he was asked where his game is right now at age 36.
I think I have a ton of room for improvement. You know, like I said, it was on Bakersfield was only my third game, you know, since the last time I played, you know, so I would say like in like 3.5 years of not playing. It's, you know, it's time. It's mostly it's timing, you know, just knocking off the rust and, you know, just figuring out like who you are again and, you know, learning what you can, what you can't do, you know, what you need to get better at. And, you know, it's for me, it's fun because, you know, I think that I can get back to playing at a high level, you know, for myself. What does that mean for me? You know, who knows? But I definitely feel like, you know, in these three games, every game that I've improved, you know, I've improved just kind of like my court awareness and the way that I'm approaching the game and seeing the game. So it's just really like being a rookie. It's almost like being a rookie again. When I got hurt, it was almost like I had to give myself amnesia the way that I got hurt. So I wouldn't really have no regrets or felt like, oh man, you know, my career was cut short from injuries. I didn't want to think about that because, you know, you can get depressed and, you know, fall into a depression. Just, you know, just reminiscing on just the injury period. So for me, it was just kind of like give yourself amnesia and not even think about anything that you accomplished or anything that, you know, anything that you did before. And so now it's like, for me, it's really like a clean slate.
When Barron met the media, he had 3 D-League games under his belt, so I asked him how long he was going to give this a go.
Now it's just I'm locked in, so I'm just going to keep playing as long as I can play now. You know, it was like once I was able to turn the corner and, you know, kind of experience this and experience what the game, you know, feels like again and practice and that camaraderie, I just kind of want to do this until, you know, I can't do it anymore.
Married now with kids, different perspective than you had a little bit.
Yeah, it's a whole different perspective. I think that, you know, really that was like one of the big things is that, you know, my wife or, you know, well, my son is only 2 and the other one is 8 weeks. So, you know, it was just like, it'd be great for my son to see me play basketball. Like, we play basketball in the yard and, you know, I know he's going to be really good one day, hopefully, on some Steph Curry level. That's what I envision for him. No pressure. But, you know, I just really wanted my son to see me play basketball. And, you know, it didn't matter on what level. Just wanted to kind of do it for him and do it for my family, you know, because it wasn't really much that I needed to do for myself. So, you know, now my family is like the driving force and motivation. You know, my friends and a lot of fans that I run into all the time is just like constantly encouraging me. And I didn't really think that I would get this type of response. You know, I didn't even know what I was getting myself into, but, you know, the positivity, you know, just from people and, you know, people just talking about how it's inspirational is, for me, it's just like always the player that I wanted to be anyway.
Like a lot of players, Barron could have played elsewhere, overseas. Why the D-League? Did he have other offers?
Yeah, I had an offer in Israel. I had an offer in like Finland, China call. Mm-hmm. But the D-League was something that I never really thought about.
Okay.
You know, I didn't really think about the D-League. I always thought about kind of going away because I didn't want the attention. I just kind of wanted to play and not be judged or, you know, play and people kind of forget. And, you know, I worked out for a team and, you know, my agent suggested that to see what was up with the D-League, and that's what led to us putting my name in the D-League, because a lot of my friends was like, man, you ready to play, like, you need to get out there, you need to put yourself out there. And I was just like, nah, I didn't really care for the attention. You know, I wanted to play, but didn't really want to, like, I don't know. I didn't know how I would handle it or how it would handle me, you know what I mean? And, you know, just kind of, like, you know, dealing with that was kind of difficult because you don't know if you know, you're too old if you're going to get a chance or not. And, you know, you sit and wait, and you basically, like, asking somebody for an opportunity, where for me, it's, I was always able to have offers and make my way.
Barron's used to the finer things in life, so I had to ask, is he doing like the Michael Jordan thing with the White Sox and buying some pimped out tour bus for his minor league teammates? Or is he flying coach?
He's flying coach.
Yeah, man. Flying coach, got a roommate. Got a roommate on the road. Got a hotel with a roommate. Yeah, I think college was the last time I did that. It's an experience, yeah, you know. Yeah, it's like, sure. I'm open-minded about it. I think that, you know, it just kind of strips you down. And it's like, if you really want to do it, then, you know, you'll humble yourself and you'll participate on the level that you're supposed to be on. And for me right now, it's like, if this is the level I'm supposed to be on right now, and I got to do everything that everybody else is doing.
Barron is one of the most beloved Warriors of all time. He was asked about his days in the Bay.
You know, from the first day I arrived, you know, people stood up and cheered for me, and, you know, just kind of like believed in me, and helped me get back to the level of playing that, you know, ultimately we were able to, you know, make our run and do what we needed to do. And, you know, the Bay Area always holds a special place in my heart. I always consider, you know, this place home for me, because this was a place where I kind of felt like, you know, the connection with the fans, you know, the fans and the team were just one. And for me, it probably the best and the most fun time I had in my career.
Even when Barron was playing, he had a ton of stuff going on off the court. Movies, clothing lines, social and political issues. Are those outside interests who make him who he is taking a back seat now?
Yeah, you know, everything is still kind of up and running. I got good business partners and people that kind of run the day-to-day stuff. So, you know, that stuff is still happening. But for me, my focus right now is basketball. And, you know, it took me a minute to kind of get all that stuff, you know, operating in the right way. And now that, you know, I'm back in the league, it's just, you know, it's just more ideas and more opportunity and talking to players. You know, that's kind of like what sparked me in the business mode anyway. It's just being around the players and their creativity. So, you know, just being locked in on basketball is just, you know, it's just really like my main focus right now, because, you know, the way I see it, I'm just on a mission to get, you know, to finish up strong in the way that I want to finish up.
Fatherhood. Barron's a dad now. He was asked his children's names.
Kingman and Luke Alden, two boys, making boys, man. L.A. for short.
Good. Ironic. Speaking of L.A., you're a Hollywood kid. What's Delaware like? I'm from Pennsylvania, so I kind of have an idea.
Delaware is not like Hollywood. Delaware is cool, man. It's cool people in Delaware. You know, all you need is really a gym and a couple good places to work out. I mean, a couple good places to eat and a movie theater. But Delaware is cool. It's calm, good people. You know, found some good people, some good places to work out at, but good fan support. It's been great. It's been a great experience.
Steve Nash is now with the Warriors. What has he meant to you on and off the court? I know you guys have done some stuff.
Yeah, Steve is cool. He's, you know, like a good friend, a brother. You know, he's, you know, just always been, you know, like a inspiration as far as, like, all the things that he's been able to do and, you know, get out of his career and his body. So, you know, I always look at Steve Nash as, you know, a lot like myself, somebody who's just, you know, I use him as always, like, as a measuring stick, you know, in each and everything that I do.
Wow. I'm just kicking it. Got my J's on. Money to be made. Let's get the day going. Spending all my time in the Bay on them. Feeling myself, make Dre on them. Man, I'm just kicking it.
All right, this is the debut of the Kicking It with Cosizzi segment, and the first topic today, the explosion of colorways and sneakers, not just for the players, but fans too, as the man who brings Kicking It to life, Cosizzi, takes us back to the beginning.
So colorways kind of came about with Michael Jordan, with him being the first person to just have not just your typical white and black and white shoe like the Converses. When he came out, he had these different colors that dropped to match that nice Bulls red and black. So he kind of paved the way for that for us to enjoy. And I think it's even cooler for off the court. because colorways can make or break a shoe. For example, the Bred 11s, which are my favorite Jordans ever. If that colorway was mixed up a little bit and certain colors were switched around, the sneaker wouldn't be as dope. I think they just picked the perfect places to put those colors, with the red on the bottom and the black patent leather with that white stripe separating those two. It just adds so much, and it makes it so cool. I get excited just talking about it, Lawrence.
Well, I got the Curry 1 Road Lows, which are similar to the colorway of the Dub Nation in the Curry 2. I wear these things all the time. You see me at the All-Star game, just walking around everywhere. They're absolutely perfect shoes. And I'm thinking of all the Curry 2s thus far this year. Which are your favorites in the colorways?
My favorites. I don't know if I can pick a favorite. I really liked his All-Star colorway. That was a really good look to me. It was clean. It looked like his family and friends that he dropped over the summer. It was very similar to that, and that was my favorite one of the Curries. So if I had to pick one, I think I would go with those, the All-Stars. But the Floor Generals was a really good look for me, too. I don't think that got a lot of buzz, but my favorite color is red. So with that being the main color of the shoe, it kind of got me a little hyped, and I had to make sure that I got those for myself. But it'll probably be between those two, the Floor Generals and his All-Stars.
Love the suit and tie as well. There's a little red accent to that as well in black and white. Very, very sure.
Those are great looks, too.
You know, right now we're watching the NCAA tournament, and you're seeing how shoes in the tournament have been kind of something that's like unfolded throughout the years. I mean, I think back to like North Carolina teams. I mean, Dean Smith had a deal with Converse, and it may have been through directly Chuck Taylor, and they had, you know, actual like Converse All-Stars on those North Carolina teams. And then soon after, I think not colorways, but team specific shoes started coming out. Like Georgetown had their own shoes, maybe Syracuse, some Nike schools had that going on. And then I think the explosion would probably have had to have happened when it was Arizona in 97 and Mike Bibby and Foamposites. But like now it's all over the place. You're just seeing it really explode on the college scene now. But would you say 97 Arizona is kind of when it kind of took a turn toward where we're seeing it now?
I would definitely agree with that. They used to do it so big, and still to this day, Arizona does it better than most teams do. All those guys have different varieties of kicks on, and they're always dope. They have a really good style. I don't know who's helping them out over there, but they do it super big. And Mike Bibby back in 97, he actually debuted the foams before Penny even got a hold of them. So that was pretty cool in itself. And for them to go win a championship, it kind of shed a whole bunch of light on those and them being such a great sneaker. But the sneakers around the college world is taking on a identity of its own, because it kind of describes who you are. Like some guys have the loud sneakers on, like Tyler Ulis over at Kentucky. He has probably the best kick game in college probably, and he does it big. He has all of these dope kicks that he rocks every game, something new. And guys all around the country just switching it up with different colors, and it kind of just says who these guys are. Some of them stay low-key, and they just rock the team kicks, which is cool. A lot of the guys rock team kicks, but then you have those other guys who are going to throw on some Jordans or the dopest Nikes, and it's always just a great look, and it's exciting for somebody like me. It really gets me going when I see these guys rocking those kicks out there, just kind of expressing themselves through their sneakers and their game. So it's always fun, and Under Armour does a great job of getting ready for the tournament and getting their teams these dope Stephs. Like right now, a lot of the guys are wearing Steph's birthday kicks, which they don't even match with like Notre Dame or Boston College or these guys, but it's just a good look. Like I said before, whether it matches or it doesn't, it's a good looking sneaker and it pops. So it just completes your whole outfit and your swag, whatever you're wearing with your accessories. The sneakers just do so much. It completes the full outfit, and I love it. I'm so excited that we get to talk about this right now, Lawrence.
Well, we're going to be doing a lot more of it. It's Koseezy. You follow him on Twitter at Koseezy. Same handle on Instagram. He runs Kickin' It. He's got his finger on the pulse. He's the best in the biz. And we're just getting started. We're going to do this a lot. And looking forward to the playoffs here. We'll have to keep watching and chronicling it right there on Kicking It.
Lawrence, I can't wait, man. We're going to keep it up, and we're gonna have a lot of fun with it.
All right, that's all for this time. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Lawrence Scott. Looking forward to the next time that we get together here on Warriors Grounds.